Marcy Robertson will tell us about weak modular operads as a model for the Teichmuller Tower.
Thanks for inviting me. This is the conference a bit off my comfort zone. You can see steam coming out of my ears. Working hard to keep up. So what I want to talk to you about today, so I should have maybe given this a different title, which is I want to try to convince you that operads have a place in this story of GT and KV. And then sort of attempt to explain why you would even want to put some abstract homotopy theory into this world as well. Okay. So let's just start with, my goal is to sort of define all these terms in a general way and to get to a result at the end that might explain why you find this interesting. Which may or may not be exactly what was in my abstract. But let's start with some background. And I apologize if I'm repeating anything from last week, but I always like to hear things twice anyway. So I'm going to let sigma gn, this is going to be an oriented surface. Genus G with n boundaries. And it's quite important actually for what I say today that these are boundaries sort of homeomorphic to a disk equipped with a collar and not functions. I know that they've been appearing in both ways, but with n boundaries. And draw one. So sigma 1, 4. And we'll denote by gamma gn the group of diffeomorphisms of sigma gn that sort of fix boundaries pointwise. This is generated by Dane twists around simple closed curves plus some relations. So the generators of this group, for example, will be twists around a curve, say around the boundary, or twists around curves like this. Alright, so I'm going to give a definition now using this of a Teichmuller tower that is due to capture Schock and Schnips, which is to say that Teichmuller tower. I'm going to leave some space here for a reason, because I'm starting this whole talk off with a line. So a Teichmuller tower, and again, there's space there for a reason if you're taking notes, consists of homomorphisms. Well, which come from nice subsurface inclusions, which are behind. From sigma gn by cutting along some disjoint union of simple closed curves. Okay, so we can draw a little picture. If I have one of my favorites, so here's this surface of genus 1 with one boundary. I could cut along this curve. Well, I rotated it, but here's a nice inclusion of a pair of hands, right? This is.
So it's generally not an inclusion. It's an inclusion of surfaces, but not an inclusion of mapping class groups.
Right, not necessarily, right? It's just, you're just mapping, the homomorphism is defined by sort of taking the Dane twists. So here, right, here's the alpha, and now here's my two alphas. So I would map those two Dane twist generators to this.
It's actually, when you cut on a simple closed loop, if you open your surface, then it is an inclusion of surfaces.
Right,
and it's an inclusion
that
you identify
to them. Right, and no, but it's not. So the number two, you wrote an inclusion of mapping class groups. It's just a map, yeah.
Homomorphism.
But it's an inclusion if you're not cutting.
But this is, so these homomorphisms are going to be defined by sending the sort of generators to the appropriate generator, right? All right, so like I said, this started with a lie, and so I can go back and tell you what's actually where the lie is. Where did I go? Well, so I technically want to have, is this the color that we can't see? Is it okay? Okay. So I technically want to be thinking about profinite completion of all of these. So throughout, these are all profinite groups. And the important part here is that the profinite completion of this mapping class group is the Atal fundamental group of the moduli space of GSG with boundary. Right, so, and there's like a few important things. We mostly will push this under the rug for this talk, but there's a few important things. So the Atal fundamental group of moduli space, it's just the algebraic notion of fundamental groups. So if you haven't seen it before, it's not a big deal. The main thing we'll be using here is that this is a smooth complex variety. So technically, there's some algebraic geometry. I'll bring it. And again at the end. And then, so what this, these maps are here are sending certain divisors to higher strata. But this is, it's fine to think about. Okay. So why would we study such a thing, and why would you want to think about this slightly differently? So, things which are, I think, the classic story, and I feel a bit awkward saying this in front of Layla, but we'll see how this works out. So there's a conjecture, well, let's say, Rosenky, that says, well, you know, if you have the absolute Galois group, so should somehow be equivalent to the automorphisms, and here I'm loosely defining this, of sort of an ideal version of the type of the tower, which is not quite the one that we have. And moreover, we want, so in other words, we want to think about automorphisms of some inherently geometric thing, topological thing, and be able to recover algebraic information. So the point of this talk today is to try to approach the idea of the ideal type of the tower. Right? Can we get a bit closer? So ideal would mean that instead of just these homomorphisms, I take all homomorphisms, all possible. Okay. I got mildly distracted, but moreover, if we sort of have the right notion of ideal, we should be able to see this as being generated by, let's say, information in genus 0 and 1. And I'll make some of this more precise. Okay. So I would say the goal of this talk is I would like to try to think about a nice way to talk about what would be ideal, right? This is gigantic even before you add the word ideal. And how to see clearly what generated by info, which is 1 and 2. This is one of the goals. So into this story and the relationship to this conference is a group GT, a profinite group GT, that contains the absolute Galois group. There's an injection here. And which has been shown by, Hatcher, Schneps, Schott. I think I'm missing at least two people. There's to be isomorphic to a genus 0 version of the type of the tau. So we'll be focusing a lot on GT, which is sort of a profinite version of the story that you might be hearing last week, in order to talk about this. All right. So I'm going to start with the definition. And this is hopefully, I tried to pick the board that where I could leave it up for the whole talk. And this is probably the wrong one, but we'll find out. All right, so what is this group GT? And how does it relate back to this story about mapping boundaries and surfaces? So GT is, again, so a profinite group, so if you don't know what that means, it's just a group. It's pairs of an integer and a word in X and Y, possibly infinite, where, and this just is here because it has to be correct, so F is in the dry subgroup, it's not really important. And then we have certain relations imposed by relationships with the free group on two letters and surfaces. So let's think about this a little bit carefully. I'm going to ignore lambda here. So this is the completion of the free group on two letters. X and Y. So in particular, this thing contains, maybe a good way to explain this contains infinite words in X and Y. Or another way to put it would be contains all covers of a wedge on two surfaces. So we can think about an element of GT, so first and foremost, as some kind of winding around two circles. Okay. Then when you write something like this, this f a squared, so here, so f, let's just write a b, okay, this will denote, so this is notation, for plugging a in for x in my word and b in for y. I mean, actually a map from the profinite group F2 into the profinite group in clustered, but for what, to visualize what we're seeing, plugging in A for X, B for Y.
Sorry, what do you mean by contains or covers of the
figure? I'm sorry?
What do you mean by contains or covers of?
Well, so just thinking about like, what is a cover, right? Some word of winding around. Right, x and y, so I could go round x all the time and then also round y. It's just a geometric way of describing infinite words.
Okay, so that's an equivalent to the statement. Sorry, yeah, it's equivalent to the first line, right?
Yes. Ah. It's equivalent to the first line, but it looks prettier with respect to the pictures. Okay. So here, what are these relations? So these are the defining relations for GT. And for this first relation, we have a picture. So this will say, this says f a squared squared a1, sorry, a2 squared a1 squared. So what is that? So this is taking place in the mapping class group of this surface, where a1 is the image, is the Dane twist around
alpha. I'm super curious, why is the relation 1 and genus 1? Usually it lives on P1 minus 4 things and
yeah,
it's 0.
It's equivalent to... Like
it's equivalent, but it's genus 1. It's symbolically important.
Because I wanted to justify using the higher genus versions, I won't get to talk about the two punctured torus in this talk. So this way there is a higher genus thing. So to make my own argument sound better.
It's certainly correct. It's just unexpected.
Yeah, so it is equivalent to something in genus 0. So you don't really need the higher genus. You need the higher genus for something slightly decided not to talk about. But yeah, so it goes around alpha 1 twice. That's a2 squared going around twice. a1 squared going around alpha 1. So you can see here that what these relations are basically talking about words along a particular Dane twist in the mapping cluster. Okay. So I can define this group entirely in terms of things that are happening in the mapping cluster. Okay. And here, so to put this in a way that's more recognizable, this would be a hexagon. And this is the pentagon that we've probably been talking about.
Another small detail is you didn't use lambda.
No, I didn't use lambda.
So you just put the subgroup G lambda equals 1.
Yeah.
Because it's a really important subgroup.
It is. And in fact, so GT1. You can't see, and this will come up at the end, is the subgroup when lambda equals 1. And this is a very important subgroup. Right, there's some lambdas in here that I left off. Yes. So let me do this. So I don't lie. Alright. I lied a couple of times at the beginning, which is good. And I can continue to lie as we go.
Did you lie before I came?
I did before you came. So on the no, actually, I just want to put profinite later. I think a surface is still a surface. That part is true. All right. So I should point out that in the sort, if you go to Leila's papers on this, so the point I made at the beginning about punctures is we cannot handle the punctures in the model I'm about to give, right? So only that. Okay, so now let me see what we're going to do. So created in my abstract, is to explain, at least in pictures, a theorem joined with Pedro Bovera in Lisbon and Jacques Morel in Paris, following that this profinite GT here is isomorphic as the homotopy automorphisms of this thing. A bunch of decorations, and sort of hasn't appeared in print, but so an almost generalization is there exists a subgroup of GT lambda, and this I will probably not get a chance to talk about, which are automorphisms of some further decorated thing. Some higher genus version. And I want to argue today that this is actually, despite all the funny symbols, kind of a nice way to approach the problem. Right? So my goal is to explain these characters. This actually means something. This is the homotopy function complex. So this is a simplicial set of mass. So there should technically be a... So this is a space of mass, and then you take pi theorem. Or some of you, sort of depending on which side of 30 you are, you probably also call it the Dirac mapping space.
Sorry, maybe I can't quite understood. So then genus zero or arbitrary genus? Or what?
So this is genus zero, yeah. And this is arbitrary genus.
But then the isomorphism both times.
Sorry, so this is a lambda, which is inside GT, is isomorphic.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that was bad to go. Mm-hmm. So there exists a subgroup of GT, which is... defined by Hatcher-Hilshoff-Schneps, which actually is equivalent to automorphisms of a higher genus version of. So
and
is it
strictly smaller, this lambda?
I actually do not know that. Layla, do you know?
No, we don't know if it's strictly smaller.
So actually, this one reason that I started talking to not theorists at all is because there's an obstruction to. Universal finite type covariance for Brazel surfaces that Shushu showed me once. And I was hoping that that would explain whether or not this is a proper subgroup. The jury's out.
But do you know if your lambda is the same group as our.
Yes, it's the same. It's the same group, yeah. Okay, so what is this weird curly thing and why? And despite having a lot of symbols, it's actually a pretty basic idea.
So that some extra relations are known?
Yes, so there's an extra relation defining lambda that occurs on the two-punctured torus.
Mm-hmm.
And I originally planned to talk about that, and then after watching all the talks today, I decided to end with the punchline being about formality, so... I decided to skip it. So, it's about day twists on the two puncture torus. So lambda requires R, but then the same calculation. So, I'll leave that up to the dig in a different way. But let's switch streams a little. So how, what are these objects? So the second part is either the technical meat of the theorem and or the boring part, depending on your point of view. So and I explained directly like how to think about operads and why they would even play a role in this game. Okay. So let's just start with some definitions. So these two N curly M thingies are operads of different flavors, and in fact they're infinity, which is kind of a homotopy operation, but all of that is rather hard, and all you really need is a good notion of graph. Here's a definition. A graph G consists of a possibly MD set of vertices. Possibly empty set of arcs A, which comes equipped with a fixed point of free involution. Basically a set of arrows, and I is reversing orientation of these arrows. And then a partially defined function map T that takes some subset of arcs to B. Let me write this nicer. So in other words, I point some arrows toward A. So let's draw pictures. Okay, so we could draw just a stick, an edge floating in space, which I'll call eta for random reasons. And what is this, right? So as a graph, this has empty set of vertices. There's nothing, of course, pointing to vertices, so there's no D. And then we actually have two directions here. So it's kind of like an edge with two directions. If you want to think about this, this is a slightly different, this is technically what's called a Feynman graph, so this is slightly different than what you frequently see in the literature, but you could just mod out by the involution to get your natural motion graph.
So the arcs are not oriented?
No, they're not oriented. They're just, technically they're just a combinatorial thing. It's just we allow there to be an involution.
But then how does the involution act, right?
Well, it acts by taking, like, sort of, so in this case, right, I should tell you this is like A to A dagger. And vice versa. So.
Also, the arc is actually a set which consists of two elements.
It consists of two elements, A and its dual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What is D?
D is the sort of sub. It's the domain of T.
And T. And each arc only goes to one vertex, so it's not from and to, but...
No, yeah, each arc only goes to one vertex. So, like, for example, I have something like this. Okay, here I have... You can think about the sort of data of T as being the, like, points going in here. but there's also kind of the dual elements here. So this is a vertex V, sort of the neighborhood of V is equal to T inverse V. So this is some subset of arcs that point toward it.
So that arc that's between the two vertices, where will T send it?
So T will send, okay, so let's call this A and this B. Okay, so A dual, so gets sent to is B. So I A B. Right, so I had here two, I had, maybe just call this. So there's a two element set. I define like that they get stuck together in order to form an edge. So if I quotient by this involution, I get one point. And then I send A to B and A dual like a W.
Just to understand, so actually the main is G is a subset not of A but of this double A.
So think about A maybe as a co-product of both some set, finite set, and some set of its duals.
Mm-hmm. So when you say a set of arcs, they're oriented arcs, but with both orientations.
With both orientations, yeah. Just to point out something that is a technical nightmare, is that technically a loop with no vertices and an edge cannot be distinguished in this language. You can deal with this, but just the way I've introduced it, I want to point out there's a technical issue. So what a caution. But you can deal with it. It's just this is a short definition. So. And here, you could also do do the opposite of sort of my subsurface inclusion, which is kind of the punchline. So you can map, you can close up ends, and we consider these embeddings. If you're extremely familiar with this type of work, this is often called an outer coalface map. The second type are going to be internal edge collapses. So here, if I have this entire loop, right, any internal edge can be smushed down. So I would have one loop, got an extra guy, so internal edge collapse. This is, again, if you're somewhat, I'm not sure if anyone is familiar with this, but if you look this up, this is called an inner coalface map. And the third, which is particularly relevant for us, is the ability to till a vertex that has arity 2, right? So here, so I'm killing an internal vertex. Okay, all the co-degenerate.
How's that different from killing, from internal edge collapse?
Because I'm killing this vertex. So I'm removing, oh, I guess in this case it's not different. So, yeah, so it depends on how this map is defined. So, you draw a different one. Okay. No, it still doesn't look the same. I have to draw a good enough picture. Here's one. So, this, that was a vertex,
okay.
And I can kill that. Certain kinds of coegenesis. Now, the key to this type of, to proving something like this, and the reason we want, is that this is a, so the key idea here, right, is that there's a well-defined notion of graph substitution. We define all the morphisms by graph substitution. Right, and this is very much what it sounds like. So, graph substitution is creating a new graph. Appropriately colored. Or here, this is obtained by substituting this graph into a smaller graph.
Cool.
So, all such in other words, we create a sort of category of graphs where every morphism is generated somehow by shoving graphs inside each other. And there's a reason for this. So the why I'll say in words and not write down, is that every type of operad, so cyclic, modular, non-symmetric, etc., is created by some kind of monadic graphs where the monadic multiplication, algebra over a monadic graphs, where the monadic multiplication is given the graph substitution. But maybe let's look at a picture to see why we would care about. Well, I have two good examples. So here's the definition. And again, this is really more of a series of theorems. But we'll call it a definition. And I'm going to leave some things. Operad. Is a functor. Let's say M from this category U off into, I'll say C. So this can be any symmetric modal category. So in the two examples I'll talk about, we can think about groupoids or vector spaces. Here, and I'll draw this picture. Satisfying that, well, we want to evaluate M at this edge that I drew, and we want to say that that is equivalent to a point, or it's trivial, and whatever that means in our category. So if we're thinking about groupoids, it's just the and two, that M evaluated at any graph G is going to be isomorphic to the product of its local data. So M at the neighborhood of V for every V in G. Alright, so that's basically just saying, what am I looking at? I'm looking at a graph and I'm going to decorate it. Draw some pictures here. Decoration to be sort of defined compatibly with the local things. So there's a relatively important three which we'll come back to. Alright, so let's define this thing that I was talking about at the beginning. So here's this N bar. Star. So that is a modular operad, and then in orange I will put the infinity in.
So can you again say what the condition one states?
Condition one, so this just means that I, so this is optional, but if this is not So what this means is that I only have one color. So here, think about this as, so I'm mapping to a category, so I'm picking an object. And this is a technical condition that means I have one colored thing. So my graphs are only colored by one thing. If I take that away, then you have colored modular objects, which is fine. The definition is still true. I just didn't want to address color as at all. So this is here for your...
What is one? It's the vertex, a single vertex?
Oh, no, this right here is the edge.
A single edge.
Just an edge. No vertices, so it's just a single edge.
And so also is the theorem definition, so it's also it's a theorem, but what has to be proved in the theorem?
So this theorem, so what you need to prove is that, you have to define a map. So this is what I put on here, this is actually a category U that admits a orthogonal factorization system, so there you can do homotopy theory here. So by defining these maps in this way, I have given it has an inherent like really model structure. So the theorem, the definition of the category is, I mean, you can technically define any kind of random graph map, right? I could just send edges to anything I want, or so I guess the theorem statement is I've defined a category U with these graph, with these morphisms, and that category is sort of the appropriate one so that when you take pre-sheaves over it, you model modular objects. And that it has homotopy theory and
okay. So the definition of U is appropriate to have to
for this, yeah. So so technically right, you can define graph maps in lots of different ways.
Is there no relation in the category U? So it's freely generated by those morphisms?
It is freely generated by those morphisms. So let's think about, so on objects, what am I going to be saying? I'm saying that I'm sending this to an element in a group. And so I want to think about this to relate back to our project. Let's sort of pretend that there's a surface here. Okay, where the leaves are boundaries. And the edges are the bodies. So think about thickening up our graph so that there's a surface here. So what would this object be? Like, so where does this live as far as being a groupoid? Well, so you can think of the mapping class group Gn, and can be promoted to a groupoid, where sort of objects are these type of graphs, or even some kind of canonical choice of surface. There's lots of ways to do this, but some kind of graphs. In the shape of a surface, and that the morphisms are the diffeomorphisms. Thinking. taking this in and mapping here, well, this corresponds to a diffeomorphism where I've now like composed with a Dane list.
Killing a vertex. You can't kill any vertex. Can you kill like the trivalent vertex?
No, you can only kill these edge ones. Yeah.
The ones that are between two edges.
The only ones that are yeah, so only vertices with area 2. Yeah. Okay. So in this way, you get a functor, right, from graphs to groupoids of mapping class groups. And
Marcy?
Yes.
So when you say a Dane twist, so when you're gluing that cylinder around, you're gluing it on via a Dane twist?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it could be the identity, but you want to, you're picking some element in C.
And is that like part of the package of this NM?
That's the only thing that you have a choice in.
Okay.
Is if you send it to plus or minus one, and then all the rest follows, the whole structure of the group.
So could you please repeat the definition of the groupoid, which is the target of the functor?
So the groupoid of mapping. So objects are going to be either there are a couple ways to do this. So objects are let's say a trivalent graphs. Okay, the gene is zero. Let's put a zero there. Also, objects are trivalent graphs. And where you think about that, and diffeomorphisms are morphisms. Morphisms are diffeomorphisms between the trivalent graphs with labels. So here, I want to have.
But you don't have your average two vertex? Like the one you drew, not trivalent.
So that's not trivalent. No, that's in here. So you have that too. These are always living in this. That's like part of. So, okay. The trivalent, that part is over here, and we're sending that morphism to a Dane twist, which is a morphism in the groupoid over here. Right, so one such morphism in this category, for example, would be a Dane twist around this simple closed curve, swapping these letters, or I guess that's a half Dane twist, so a full Dane. So there. So that's a half, but you do it again, right? So here's a diffeomorphism of a surface. You imagine this thickened up. And I'm twisting around this curve. And in the way that you've defined this functor, this comes from, well, this is actually coming from an isomorphism. If we go all the way around, this comes from the fact that you can sort of blow up your graph. I ran out of space. So if I do the full twist, I'll just like keep doing this. This full twist is the image, this morphism is an image of a morphism that looks like I've chosen this to say plus one.
Okay, but then on the category U, you were allowed to remove those bivalent vertices, right? Yes.
All right, are you saying that you're substituting every average two vertex with a choice of the dangerous direction? You're sort of substituting it as you.
No, it's more that. Every area, so that they can be substituted. It's more that those morphisms are in the category, right? So you can, they're technically like different objects, right? Or I guess they're, and this, what's going on here, right? So you have two
what's
objects.
Going on there, I understand topologically, but what's going on there with respect to it being the image of the thing on the left?
Right, so we're saying that this composition, right, so this is a So think of this goes to Z, and this is a map here, right? But I have a map. So if I want to look at a morphism from here to here, which I'm twisting the labels, I can model this morphism by this graph substitution here. So all morphisms come from some graph substitution. And so when I'm mapping into this cuboid, I'm saying that this diffeomorphism comes from a specific graph substitution.
So basically, the morphism just from objects to objects is not injective.
No.
Okay.
So just to make sure I understand me, the single edge is an object or a morphism?
It is an object.
So you should be mapping it to an object.
I am mapping it to an object in the mapping class group. So see, this is actually like groupoids. This is like a tower of groupoids.
Sorry for interrupting, but you wrote that objects are graphs with labels.
Yes, objects of here are graphs with labels, and morphisms are diffeomorphisms of it, so of the associated surface, right? So let's think about what that means. So if we have a graph, I can like decorate it by a surface, by like fattening it up. And so if I take the edge, what's the way of fattening it up? It would be a cylinder. And the morphisms in that category are diffeomorphisms.
Last question. If you have a graph like you have, where you have some edges that don't have a vertex in the middle of the edge, you're not allowing those dang twists.
No, but there's always another graph that will give it to you. Okay. Yeah. So it's so technically, I mean, you could build the category differently, but then it's really nasty.
You have the same surface, but allowing more dang twists or less dang twists on it.
Exactly. And if you, usually when this is, there's versions of this in the literature, most notably probably to Alarika Tillman, and she doesn't allow any dang twists. You just kill them all off. So we're adding this extra frame of the dang twists. My goal was to give you an example of circuit algebras, but maybe I will skip that in your interest. So I will state yes.
Is there a way to see what the internal edge collapse looks like?
That's gluing stuff together. So the internal edge collapse is right. So let's say we want to go from. Pair of pants, another pair of pants, and I'm going to give these labels. I'll just do different letters for the sake of everything. And then I'm going to define a composition to be, say, I'm going to glue C to 2, right, to make a new surface. So what does that look like in graphs? Well, that composition in graphs is this. So this morphism gives you that composition. So it's the opposite. There was and I forgot whose talk it was. Someone was cutting apart surfaces and then talking about how it was the opposite of their
the last talk, Costantino?
No, and that also, there's been in like several talks today. I was thinking of the one with the 3D things. Dylan. Yeah, so about how he was defining the gluing, basically about being the opposite of cutting. Right? So that's exactly what this is. So I'm thinking now here I have a surface like this, and I can look at cutting it, and in fact this is the punchline, along this simple closed curve here. And that's the opposite. Composition gives me that cutting, and that information, that data of this curve gluing, is encompassed in the internal edge.
So one way of seeing what you're doing then is you have the first object, even what you just drew with that dangerous allowed morphisms, and you send it to the exact same surface but without. So it's basically like pinching that day twist to zero.
It is, yes.
Okay. I see.
Maybe another way to put this is, and I don't know if this is exactly the right terminology, but I'm building up the groupoid of the maximal curve complex. So you have like the different curve decompositions of a surface, and then you can build the groupoid between them. So, and modeling that.
But not only maximal, you're taking.
I'm taking all of them.
All of them.
Yeah. So you capture all of them, but so in other words, all possible cuts across the surface are captured in this data. Okay. All right. So my claim is that what is a I've now defined the sort of n with the n in the stars. But I didn't erase my intent. And then the hard part that's in orange, which is like the secret homotopy theory, is that you actually want to think about this profinitely. And this makes this no longer strictly an isomorphism, but a weak homotopy equivalence at the level of nerves of the groupoid. So this is not important for understanding, it's just pointing out why the homotopy theory lives here. And then you add the notion that N is really vibrant to the story. That's just a technical condition and it's part of the whole factorization. So basically what I'm saying is that you build the model directly by using graphs, which are pretty easy to get your hand on. You can put some homotopy theory on it so that you can define a nice functor like this that captures all of these nice surface inclusions of groupoids that we want in the type Miller tower. And then the infinity part, homotopy, comes because you can't make this work after profinite completion. I may not get to my main point, but at least I'll say one. The reason for the orange is that it's a general fact that it's the big hat. If X and Y are topological spaces, only in very nice situations will you have that the profinite completion of the Cartesian product is even weakly equivalent to the Cartesian product of the profinite completion. It happens to be true if, for example, X is equivalent to the classifying space of this groupoid, then this holds. So you can, in fact, assemble all of these compositions make sense, but you have to reduce this notion, right? How does that look on picture? Well, here I'm saying that that product is this composition, and so this is only going to be a homotopy equivalence once we pass to the algebraic model, to the profinite itself. So that's, again, I'll sweep most of that behind, but that's the only reason it's there. It's a lot of machinery to say something that's actually pretty straightforward. So, having built the machinery, you don't have to use it anymore. You can just write down this like function. All right. So, I was going to tell you something else, so I'll just state a theorem and then tell you why you might actually care about this at all. Other than the fact that I'm going to restate the previous theorem, which is that what you can check is that if you compute the homotopy automorphisms of this weird functor, you get profinite GT. And so we're really putting this as a model for the type Wheeler tower in the sense that this functor captures all of these nice subsurface inclusions, although there's a disclaimer at the end. And it has sort of the appropriate action of the Asugawa group. But the fact that the composite, all the morphisms are defined in, as generated by three ways is exactly the same as telling you that this is all you need to generate all morphisms of that object. Precisely one. Okay. Other stuff that fits in this language. So, sorry, Shushi, circuit algebras are an example. Is why you're seeing all these derivations. And so there's another consequence of it, which is also formality. And I think it's come up in a bunch of talks, so this is an interesting. So a consequence. Actually, kind of trivial corollary of the and i.e., so as an opera, this would mean there exists the zigzag of congruences between the homology, the rational homology, and the singular chains. So this is putting together two ideas that are pretty well known in, by some people in this room. So this puts together two ideas. Theorem by Sullivan, take the classifying space when you have a superficial set, and then you take the singular chains of that. And then you can take them all at each part, and it's compatible with all of the functor, or all of the object. So it's just a bunch of, or it's an op. Another way to put this is it is a functor, but now the image is in chain complexes instead of via the singular.
So what does this homology compute? So what does this homology compute? M is supposed to be a classifying set or something? Or?
Yeah, so M is... this is B of this. Sullivan says if you have a grading automorphism that lifts of some CTGA. That lifts to an automorphism of A itself, then A is formed. Okay, and I was going to sketch the proof, but I'll just say that the idea, the key idea is that what you can do for a CTGA, what Sullivan really did, was produce something called a minimal model, which itself is graded. And then given such a grading automorphism of homology that lifts to the minimal model, lifts to A, lifts to the minimal model, and that gives you your quasi-isomorphism of isomorphism. One advantage the point of having operads in the story at all is that we can extend this, the notion of a minimal model exists here. So we have the notion of formality is a well-defined thing, and we want to like lift this idea from CDGAs to operads. Now, there's the tricky part in where the Galois action comes in. Now, you can't ignore that we're talking about algebraic varieties. So basically, the notion of a grading automorphism of homology, what should this be for if now what's in A is a graded thing of algebraic varieties? So I'll just say it was a consequence of the proof of the Bayle conjectures, Bayle conjectures, which I just misspelled every time. That you could say, well, if we want to extend this notion to, say, complex varieties, smooth complex projective variety, well, that you can choose, we do so by choosing a countable subfield over which claim. So why? So there's this have an action of GT on your opera. So GT acting on M, right, it factors this action on M, or automorphisms in M, factors through the cyclotomic character. So I can pin my gradient morphism specifically as some infinite root here. And that allows me to get formality and some direct consequence. So, and this, of course, is a consequence of the existence of the associator, but it's a way to see it. So in other words, GT acts on M, then we and we have this factorization. Right, so what we end up doing is we pick a U here, and UP is the gradient morphism, so that U to the P gives the appropriate gradient morphism on
so, sorry, maybe I'll get confused here. So
yeah.
You say that the GT hat action factors through the cyclotomic.
It in fact factors through the cyclotomic character.
But because then, like, how should we think about it? Because you've explained that GT hat are some kind of homotopy or automorphisms, right,
yeah,
of this gadget M, and
right,
from that one can imagine that one can see all of it through that action. But now you say it factors through this cyclotomic character is something very small, right? In kind of so what I'm probably missing.
No.
It's
on
a homology.
On the sorry.
It's on a homology where you see this cyclotomic.
Yeah. So I lied to you in a way
that
it's probably not very nice.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
On that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So on M itself, you can basically, in some sense, whatever that means, see all the distinguish all the elements of GT hat, right?
Yes. Yeah, you can. And
let's
go. And then I guess I will, in the last 6 minutes, I'll conclude by saying, what does this, or maybe just ask some questions. So this is, in my opinion, a nice way. It's actually, even though it's very, I don't do the world's best job. Somehow the functor that I define is a very simple thing. It's not a simple thing to prove it's the right thing, but it's a simple definition, which, you know, after an hour or so with it, you would all believe this models the type of workout in some way, or the thing that I described. And as a consequence of it being an opera, well, A, it's sort of algebraically generated. So it is generated in genus 2, the modular the higher genus 1 and genus 1. So it has that property that we're looking for. And because it's an opera, we can also talk a little bit about formality. You can talk about formality of each of the varieties in the tower, or you could just talk about that as the whole thing. It's a nice package way of looking at it. Here are some disclaimers. I've been compactifying all along. So when I write M, you know, this is the Lie-Mumford compactification of the genus zero moduli space. So in some sense, you've killed a lot of cool stuff. And it would be nice to take this away, but I don't really know how to do that. I don't really know how to do that. I have lots of ideas and none of them work. So it's impossible to be done. And then maybe some interesting questions. So I just discovered actually this morning, but my goal for coming here was to ask, is there a profinite version of KV which acts on solutions of Cauchy-Warren equations the way that GT acts on the space of associators. And it turns out that Leila has written a paper on this, so there exists some profinite version of KV. And that somehow the twist person, you have
not the finite, no.
No, not the profinite version. Okay, so
I wish.
I would like to know what a profinite version is.
Me too, we would all like.
And I would very much like that GT wants it itself.
No, that would be great.
That would be great. And then I think this would be a sort of explanation for why you're seeing formality results that are coming that I've been talking about. I think I will stop there.
Any further questions?
I do have just one. Your NM star whatever hat thing.
Yeah.
captures or codifies some of those subsurface inclusions. But does it, because at the very beginning you said ideal type coder tower would have all homomorphisms by which I presume you meant they come from the geometric plane.
Yeah.
Does it capture more of those homomorphisms than just the ones that were already in the type coder tower?
It can. So if I can get that compactification off, then the answer is yes.
So the answer is maybe?
The answer is maybe. And that's one thing that I've been working on. I can't quite get my gluings to be associative, even at the homotopy.
Do you have an example of a homomorphism that is not captured in the tape or tower that we have? There are a couple.
I have a weird one, but it's written down and I'll have to pull out.
You have a weird one?
Yeah.
That comes from geometry somehow, but it's not a type or a tower.
I don't know if it comes from geometry, but it comes from weird gluing, so I should show
Show it to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are some weird things that happen if you remove that compactification, and those are possibly more morphisms to the type of the tower. I don't know if it actually will tell you more than when you take these homotopy automorphisms, it seems to be such an intense machine that it kills a lot of information. So in some sense, it might not tell you anything extra.
For instance, if all this worked, it would tell you that GT respects more homomorphisms.
It would say that it respects more
which
homomorphisms.
Which brings it towards GQ, so it makes sense.
Further questions? Well, let's thank the speaker once again.